was around the neck. No more like a millstone. A plumbing stone, by God. Damn them all.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another Heart of Horror. I am one of your hosts. My name is Bo. With me, as always, the literary, some might even call bookish or perhaps even sexy librarian-esque, Kate Pollack.
Thanks.
Sure.
Hi.
Well,
it's funny, it's kind of ironic that you called me bookish librarian, because the first word, I don't know what it means, that you use. So.
Right.
I'm clearly not that bookish. But no, actually, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I just got off interviewing another author for my new show. Plug, plug. Yeah, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yes, and what is that called, and where can people find it?
It's called Kate Anjou's Book Reviews. Anjou is spelled A-N-J-O-U. It's my middle name because I just didn't want to use my last name on it. And it, you know, I had this joke where it's like, it sounds better than Kate Pollock Chat's Book Bollocks, but apparently everyone thinks that that's a bet.
It's pretty good.
But no, I went with Kate Anjou's Book Reviews, and I've done all the logos, and I'm now like 4 episodes in, so it's that one, I'm afraid, guys.
All right,
but my next one, maybe I'll say Kate Pollock Chat's Book Bollocks. But yeah, so you can find that on pretty much all your normal places. But I also have a YouTube channel.
What?
Yeah, so it's just Kate Anjou's Book Reviews, and essentially, if you want to follow me on socials, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Instagram and TikTok have little full stops between each word, but it's just still Kate Anjou's Book Reviews. So go follow me and stuff on there, but because it's all about promoting and reviewing indie books,
mm-hmm.
Primarily fantasy and horror. Although I'm open to most things, but like a lot of the indie authors I know are in those genres, and it's my kind of like favorite genre. And I also interview the authors of the books. So so there's like 2 little episodes, whereas one's a review and then one's like an interview. So I just got off interviewing the lovely Ciarán Farangray, who does dark fantasy romance. So lots of spice, lots of gore, lots of demons. It's great.
I think most importantly, how do I get on that show?
You got to write a book. Have you written a book? You've written a book, haven't you?
I have written a book.
You have? You can come.
But it's been a long time. And it almost feels like that would be cheating. Although, I've been, you know, the itch has certainly been there of late. And I think I may do that over the summer. I think that may be my summer project, is to write a novel.
Okay. Well, then, yeah. You have to follow me and shit, and then, you know, slide up in my DMs, eh?
Sure. That's what I'm known for.
Well, you can just pop me a message and ask me like a normal person. Yeah. It's fine.
Like, you ask my kids, they will tell you that I'm pretty much the sliding into DMs type. They're like, look, we don't know much. We're still, you know, just young people. We're just ninth graders.
Yeah.
But one thing we do know for sure is that Mr. Ransdell is the coolest person that has ever lived.
100%. Yeah. That's all they need to know. They don't need to know anything else.
You know,
that piece of information will see them through life.
I was making fun of myself, of course, because my kids think I am an old nerd, and rightly so. That's not
a lie.
That's a pretty accurate a representation of me. But I did have a genuine, like, a moment where a kid was genuinely impressed by me. And at the end of the day, like, you can't really give a shit because they're teenagers and they don't know anything. So, like, their opinion of you can only matter so much. Otherwise, you're fucking finished.
No, I definitely seek validation from teenagers. I ain't gonna lie.
I do to an extent, but also you have to understand that they're fickle.
Yeah.
And so you can't. Like a teacher goes through that thing that a parent does where the teenager is like too cool for you.
Yeah.
But it happens all the time. Like, it's just
doing that now, and she's five.
and it really sucks because you're like, I know that you want to hang out and have fun and talk, but it would seem like you would seem unusual to do so. And anyway, but the point being is that I'm at my desk today, and a couple of the kids are doing some other shit nearby, like drawing on the dry erase board and stuff. And because, you know, I don't actually teach anything. I'm just like, look, I'm just keeping you off the streets for 45 minutes. No, we had a lot of testing today and blah, blah, blah. So we weren't like, it wasn't a regular class.
Yeah.
But one of the kids mentioned one of the girls, I will say for the time being and for the sake of argument, in my class, who recently came to me and was like, hey, I want you to call me this other name. Because I'm kind of going through a journey right now. And I was like, oh, okay, fucking whatever. Sounds great. I hope it's bringing you happiness and peace.
Fuck yeah.
And so, you know, I've been calling her by that name for, I don't know, you know, a few weeks now.
Sure.
And she wasn't there today, but one of the other, one of her friends was talking about her and was like, oh yeah, they're not here today. And used, you know, the new name and so forth. And I was like, oh, yeah, I've been meaning to ask about this because I suspected that this was the case. But is she now, like, is she identifying as non-binary? And they were like, yeah, she, you know, at this point, they preferred their pronouns to be they, them.
They, them, right.
And I was like, okay, got it. I felt awkward about asking them directly, but now I know that and I got it. Okay, registered. And one of the kids, like, genuinely was taken aback by it and was like, so, like, you don't care? And I was like, no, whatever, you know, whatever makes them happy, then that's what we'll do. Like, it's not my position to tell them one way or another, you know, what their pronouns are. That's their business.
Absolutely, yes.
And they're like, so many of the other teachers were like, well, that's not what it says on your file or whatever.
Oh,
and I was okay. Like, oh, that fucking sucks. But it's also Tennessee and I get it. And yeah. but it was a nice moment where like a kid was like, oh, okay. So not like I'm a cool teacher, but of like, oh, okay. You're a decent person.
Yeah. That's a respect.
Right. It really was a nice moment of like, oh, okay. So we're safe with you about this stuff. Okay, good.
That's so important for kids to feel that way about their teachers. Like it's more, in fact, I would say it's more important than the educational side of things. Like at least in terms of a child's well-being, is just to feel like that they have that safe space, that there is someone in like outside of the family that they can trust and talk to when they maybe don't want to talk to their family. Cause even if you have the best relationship with your parents, there's still some things you don't really want to talk about with them, especially at that age. So the fact that, you know, you've displayed, you're the type of person that, you know, they can trust with that kind of stuff and know that they're going to be respected. That's so fucking huge. Like, yeah, like that's so fucking huge. Fair play, mate. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's bare minimum shit, right?
It absolutely is. But unfortunately we live in a world where bare minimum isn't even being met.
Yeah.
So, half the time. So, you know, a little goes a long way.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. What you said is true. I think that more than like all the grammar and shit that I try to teach these kids to varying degrees of success. But beyond that, it really is just about like, hey, here's how you be like, just not an asshole.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like right now you're a ninth grader, you're a freshman in high school and you're an asshole. and that's not entirely your fault. Like that's hormones and so forth. Like there is a reason that
your ninth brain's graders actually developed and yeah.
Right. Like there is a reason that, you know, these kids are assholes for the most part. Some are, but most of them are, you know, but that's fucking how it goes.
Yeah.
Hey, enough of this bullshit though. We've got important stuff to talk about and namely, we have got to talk about these documentaries.
Oh yeah,
that you have seen. Because okay,
yeah, because last episode we mentioned that you'd we spoke about that in the episode, didn't we?
Yes.
And I have since caught up, and we were talking about Escaping Twin Flames.
That's right.
Oh, fuck. Like, fuck. For those who haven't seen it, it's this, basically, it's these love, quote-unquote, self-professed love gurus mm-hmm. that will guarantee that they will find your twin flame for you. If you complete these courses, pay all this money, do all this shit, you will find your twin flame, which is essentially like, it's almost like a fate. You're fated to be together. You're the most perfect person. You're each other's halves. You complement each other completely, perfectly. They're the perfect person, lover, companion, everything for you, right?
Right.
The ultimate love goal, okay? But you have to pay all this out. And you have to do this. And you have to do this. Oh, and if that's not enough, we're going to completely dictate all of your fucking behavior. And on top of that, if you're not the gender we want you to be, we're going to make you change it.
That's so
talking about what yeah. you were saying. Fucking, oh, just, it's just the most backwards fucking, like, it's so weird because it's so backwards because they come across as though, hey, we're pro, you know, sexual identity and diversity and stuff, and we're pro this and pro that, as long as it's within our rules, which is so the opposite of what gender is. Gender is about freedom, the way that you feel inside yourself. It is not about what someone tells you you are. And that's, and people have gone through fucking top surgery and shit to achieve these standards that these fucking people who are in charge have set, and they have brainwashed them to fucking think that they are trans. Maybe some of them are. I'm not going to say that they're not. And maybe this journey has helped them realize, or like help them be more authentic to themselves. But I can guarantee you a fucking ton of them are not. And then on top of that, they isolate you from your family. They take all your money. They make you completely dependent on them. So even if you don't like what's being done, you can't leave. Oh, it is the most, and they are the most, he is the most infuriating. I just want to punch his stupid fucking grinning face in.
Yeah, it's.
Take over, Bo. It's making me angry.
It's fucking crazy. So there are two documentaries. There's one on Netflix, one on Amazon. Yeah. I like the style, I think, of the Netflix one, but I like the content of the Amazon one more, because the Amazon one is the one that gets into, like, we're going to go to their house and we're going to hang out with them a little bit. And that's kind of the stuff that I want to see, is like, because in the Netflix doc, you never get the moment of, oh, they have some of the members of the cult living there with them.
No, I think you get different things. So I would say watch both.
Yeah. For sure.
But yeah, because in the Netflix one, they didn't say about them actually living with them and things. And yeah, they focus a lot more on like the victims in terms of like each step of the program and how they manipulate the members to then be perpetrators as well. And, you know, and the transgender forcing, like the, you know, the gender reassignment forcing and things like that. But then in the Amazon one, as you say, yeah, we have this, the journalist, I can't remember her name now.
Yeah, I don't remember either, but yeah.
But yeah, and then she's doing this article for Vanity Fair, and she goes to their house and she sees all this batshit crazy. And we also get like interviews with like their family members and old friends and things.
Yeah.
And oh, her dad is heartbreaking.
Yeah, man, the thing that's really, really, like, moving about the documentaries, and they're, I mean, fairly salacious. Not, like, to call them moving is probably overstating a little bit, but it is really interesting. And getting into, where they're making their money, what they're spending their money on, and I just kind of dug all that stuff. So I've really had a good time with both of those documentaries and digging into like cult leader stuff. Like, I love a good cult leader, and this is 100% that kind of stuff.
Oh, it's batshit. It's so, they're so manipulative, and like, you know, you see footage and they're like really just emotionally and mentally abusing these people and like verbally abusing these people. It's just crazy, like how someone can be so stripped of their identities, their self-worth, their, you know, their dignity. And then not only that, but they pay for the fucking privilege. It's just, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. That's real fucked up. And yeah. The thing that I always love about cult stories is the psychology of both the cult leaders and the people that buy into the shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially the Amazon one, that's kind of the stuff that I get more from.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't know if I recommended it to you this way or you just did it this way, but you said that you watched the Netflix doc and then the Amazon doc.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I would agree, because I think that you kind of, it's kind of like working from the ground up, isn't it? Because you see how people get involved with it in the Netflix one and how certain, you know, people rise up the ranks and things. But then like with the Amazon one, you then see like the top of the food chain thing with Shalia and, oh my God, I've forgotten his name.
Yeah, it's been enough time since I've seen it, I don't remember. But I mean, let's just call him Nico. Because yeah. He seems like a Nico.
No offense to other Nicos.
Sure, no offense, but also a little bit of offense, because...
A little bit. If you're a Nico, you know what you did.
Yeah. Oh, you are well aware.
You know who you are.
Yeah. You know what's up.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I would recommend watching them in that order. But yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about relationships and stuff all the time. And the fact that they swindle people by like, I can get you this thing that you're searching for, that you think is going to be this thing that, you know, fulfills you.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, you got to pay your way. And it ends up being like just real fucked up.
Yeah. And if you can't pay your way, oh, that's okay, because you can work for us for nothing.
Right.
And that's how you can pay your way, is you can just work for us, but we won't pay you. But you'll spend every single waking second of your time doing this job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. And then like, and also as well, what like blows my mind is how they're completely showcasing and showboating all of the stuff that they are now getting, like, you know, driving Ferraris, live in this like really big house, and like they're like millionaires and stuff, and everyone's and they're spinning it as though like, hey, we came from nothing and now we're here because I found we found each other, and we're now basically all powerful, and I'll get to that more in a minute. And then they say, and then they're using it as this like success story. It's like, but how are you not putting together that it's the money that you're paying for this bullshit that is paying for all of this stuff, and you are miserable, and they are fucking living the life of luxury because of your fucking money. Like, and then when they turn around the Netflix documentary, and then he turns around and he says, basically, I'm the second coming.
Yeah.
And
he's like,
look at the picture of Jesus and then look at me. We're the same person. And he genuinely seems to believe it. And they say they've got this like special communication with God, and how God speaks to them and says that even if I were religious, like the fact that I'm not religious in that way, like I don't believe in like a God like that, like at all, but like, you know, I'm finding it outlandish, but like if I were religious, I'd be so offended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And these people who are religious and stuff are in this cult, you know, because it's a cult, they were going, yeah, you know, and and if you dare speak out, and oh, the whole thing about like, oh, if you don't find your twin flame, you must be fucking miserable. And this one person, actually, no, I'm pretty happy. I've got a good job. That no, you're miserable. Yeah, all right, buddy.
Right. Yeah, I'm fine. No, you're not. We'll tell you if you're fine or not. And but that goes along with the gender stuff that you were talking about, where they're just like, and you've now got masculine energy, therefore you're now the man in the relationship, and that's how you're gonna live, and you're gonna go by a man's name. And I mean, yeah, and it's just it's fucking nuts.
I mean, I've watched a fair few cult documentaries and stuff. I've never seen this kind of thing before. Like, this is another level of just insanity. And like, they're still, I went on their website out of morbid curiosity, mm-hmm. and it's all functioning. You can still pay, you can still sign up for a free trial. And then I'm like, what? And the fact that they said that there was no, they found no, they invested, the police investigate, and they said that there was no criminal stuff going on. I'm like, are you high? Like, what? But then they did apparently refer it on to the FBI. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, that, it, and it also feels like the word is out, right? Like,
yeah.
You would have to still be in that cult to, like, think that being in that cult was okay.
Yeah. Know? And, like, the Vanity Fair article, apparently, like, after reading that, a lot of people left, didn't they? They said in the Amazon documentary. Yeah, they said like a bunch of people dropped out after that because it kind of like pulled the wool from their eyes. but yeah, there are still thousands and thousands of people all over the world as part of this universe.
Well, universe feels, yeah. It's
I'm using their word.
Yeah, yeah. Universe.
I'm not like giving them additional gravitas.
it's just I mean, I'm continually like amazed and surprised and fascinated by that kind of, you know, brazenness, because you have to be pretty bold to be like, hey, you need to change genders. Like, you have to be feeling yourself in a way that is beyond my ken. Like, I've never been that confident about anything in my whole life.
That's not confidence. That's fucking arrogance and narcissism, that is.
Well, sure. Yes, you're right. You're right.
But yeah, go check it out, though, everyone. It's really great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're great documentaries.
Sure, yeah. If you haven't seen it, you absolutely should. Yeah. Yeah, it's really, really fun. Okay, so that's, you know, our recap on Love Cult documentaries, a new segment that we have yet to title. but in the meantime, what about, do we have some ghostly / alien fuckery to get into? Wow.
Well, we actually have gone like a slightly different route, which I messaged you about. And it was just batshit enough for it to be something that we want to do. Why is my phone not opening? Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And right. Like, we have, I was talking to Duncan about this, that we have kind of moved on from just ghostly dating to just straight up like, hey, what kind of weird shit are you fucking?
Yeah, I mean, it could be the new segment name of just like, instead of you should be fucking, you shouldn't be fucking.
Right, right. You're flying in the face of all wisdom from Duncan and Bo Come Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes maybe you shouldn't be fucking.
Maybe sometimes you shouldn't be fucking.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I will come back to ghosts because there is still like a plethora of articles and whatnot out there. But these ones, this one just, I saw it just on by chance on my Instagram feed, and I was like, what? So meet Spanish artist Alicia Framis, the first woman to marry a hologram.
Some naturally.
Black Mirror shit right here. So the multidisciplinary artist from Barcelona, Alicia Framis, will be the first woman to marry a hologram generated by AI in a ceremony that will take place this summer. When was this article written? Oh, recently. Okay. 2 months ago.
So you're saying there's still a chance.
At the Depot Boijmans van Bruningen Museum in Rotterdam. That's probably not how it's pronounced. Apologies.
It's probably perfect. That's probably the...
So, right, let me just, okay, this description may not fit the ideal relationship for many, but it embodies a love from an alternative dimension. Spanish artist Alicia Framis will have the curious honor of being the first woman to say I do to a virtual partner, a sophisticated hologram of her own design tailored to satisfy all of her emotional needs. I am sure not just emotional, if she's catered it to herself. Although, how does that work? Anyway, though currently categorized as a performance, the artist's depiction reflects a scenario that could seem as, oh, fuck it. She's not even fucking actually. Maybe I'll go back to another one. Okay, I'll read on. With this project, Framis aims to reflect on the interactions between humans, artificial intelligence, and contemporary art. The artist has advanced some of the details of her relationship with the holographic image called, for fuck's sake. So I'm not sure how it's pronounced, but it's like Alex, but like Alex.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Like Alex.
Something like that. Which she created from Which she created from profiles of her past relationships.
Oh no.
Okay, cool. I'm glad I continued. Because the one I sent you was very like a limited sort of article, so I sort of like looked up quickly before we got on here, but I actually haven't read this through properly. Framis is currently designing her wedding dress and determining the attire of those attending the ceremony, which will take place this summer of the roof of a museum in Rotterdam. Also, together with the LAM Museum, or LAM Museum, the Dutch Food Art Museum, Framis is working to create you say about me being bookish and reading, and I can't fucking say
basically. Hey, so far so good. I like all this.
Molecular food for their wedding banquet that both humans and humanoids can enjoy. I want to make an artistic documentary that includes drawings, interviews with other women, sketches about bodies, arms, romantic dreams, domestic situations, and the daily life of my partner. I want to explore how to integrate the hologram into my daily life. As proof of their relationship and coexistence, Framis shares videos and photographs on her Instagram account in which she appears with her partner, Alex, sharing everyday tasks such as cooking and dining. Love and sex with robots and holograms are an inevitable reality. They are great companions and capable of expressing empathy. Just as phones saved us from loneliness, did it? Did it? And filled the void in our lives, did it, though? Did they?
Yeah,
did they
I think there is a lot of scientific evidence to the contrary on this one, but go on.
Holograms as interactive presences in our homes can take it even further. Oh my God. The artist is also exploring the possibility of creating the first mortgage to purchase with a holographic companion, as well as a house designed specifically for a hologram and a human being.
That sounds expensive.
Yeah, that they're not going to work, love. They don't have a paycheck. How are you? Okay. A new generation, so this is a quote, a new generation of love is emerging, whether we like it or not, in which humans will marry and maintain relationships with holograms, avatars, robots, and so on. Just as we practice new languages with Duolingo, we will practice relationships with these entities. That's not the same.
Yeah.
That learning from a computer is not the same as having a relationship with one. And also as well, like a new generation of love is emerging. You're the first person to do this, love. Like, I don't think anyone else is doing this. I mean, you know, having an evening with your fleshlight is one thing. Marrying a hologram. Oh my God, it's Krieger.
Krieger? Oh, yeah from Archer.
Yeah.
He's got his waifu. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Okay. Framis has dedicated her artistic career to bringing science and art together to cultivate meaningful relationships, offering support to people facing illness. Offering support to people facing illness, disability, gender imbalance, or traumatic experiences. I'll see, now I feel bad. Okay, fine. This is kind of sweet, I guess. The latest performative project is also conceived as a therapeutic tool for those who have suffered trauma or abuse, as well as those facing the loss of a loved one.
Yeah.
I kind of get that, I suppose.
But
it's still kind of weird, though.
To an extent, right. Like, the therapeutic side of it, I can kind of see. But it, like, it doesn't sound like she is doing this purely as like a way to call attention to this, you know, like need to, you know, like, hey, we've got to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to love and feel companionship. And also, I'm going to do it in the weirdest possible way.
And yeah, and also, like, incorporate all the personalities of my exes. Can you imagine? Surely there's some sort of infringement there.
Not only that, like, there's a reason they're your exes. Why are you pulling from failed relationships?
Like, I just, that part is fucking weird. So last bit, this is not Framis's first experience incorporating non-human elements into her art. In 1996, she became the first artist to coexist with a mannequin named Pierre. The resulting work, Cinema Solo, was composed of 36 photographs and a dialogue between Framis and the mannequin, inspired by Marguerite Duras's book, La Maladie de la Motte.
Okay.
So I think I know why her and her exes are ex. And I'm not going to point fingers, but I'm pretty sure it's her.
Yeah, almost certainly.
Yeah. Allegedly.
Yeah, I mean, like, all of this reminds me of a woman I dated years ago who was a poet.
God. Yeah.
And it was awesome that she was a poet until the poet side really came out. And it was like, oh, you're just also a crazy person. Got it. Okay.
How was she crazy, if you don't mind asking?
She was very anti-vax.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a problem, and left out a lot of important details about her life. Like, I think she might have been an escort to some degree.
While she was dating you?
Yeah, well, we did not date that long.
Yeah, okay.
But maybe, like, it was just a real weird kind of situation that I never fully got a great read on. Mm. And all of it was just like, your life sounds very complicated. And I don't think you need me.
Yeah, you got some stuff going on before you really need to be in the dating pool.
Right. There's just a lot of moving parts. And I'm not sure exactly, like, what the whole situation was. Anyway, I know we are being very, like, upfront and honest. But this is one of those stories that is really completely unsatisfying because I don't have a lot of details, just a lot of hunches based on things like, you know, when we started dating, she was like, well, I'm still seeing other people. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I mean, we're not, we've gone out for, you know, a couple of times and that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
And, but then it was like, yeah, so, you know, I've got to go get, this dress because I'm dating this guy, but he's married. And I'm like, that's
a red flag, isn't it?
Right. That sounds like a real rough situation.
It's not an E&M situation. Like, the wife presumably doesn't know about it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was not good. But it, like, I never knew anything specifically about all that was going on, but I knew that it was messy enough that I wanted no part of it.
Yeah, defo.
Yeah.
She's the woman that they sing about in Unholy, you know, by Sam Smith.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so so dating a hologram. I don't know. I mean, what's the sex like, do you think? Is that all pre-programmed as well, you would think?
Well, I mean, it's a hologram, so I can't imagine there's much penetration going on or any kind of physical. I mean, unless, like, she gets, maybe she puts Pierre, the mannequin, with him and superimposes the hologram onto his face, puts a strap on, and goes to something town that I can't think. Goes to Happy Town.
Happy Town. You would almost want to do. Have you ever seen those things where it's like Twitch plays a video game where it's audience members selecting inputs for a controller, so playing a video game by community?
Yeah.
Okay. So what if you did that with the sex toys? So it's just like, hey, it's time for sexy time with my hologram. I'm just going to throw it up on, you know, Instagram or whatever. And if people respond with a heart, then it goes to this speed and, you know, an eggplant is this speed or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. Although, I mean, oh God, that's a really great way to make money on OnlyFans though, I bet.
Oh, you would think.
Maybe she's on something.
Yeah. I asked Duncan a very dumb OnlyFans question recently.
What did you ask
him? Well, because I was like, is it just fucking on OnlyFans?
No.
And yeah, and so that's what I've since learned.
How does Duncan know?
Duncan has an OnlyFans.
I'm sure he does.
What's
his handle? I respect Duncan way too much.
it's the Big Blue because you know the pride of Scotland.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah,
and yeah. Oh,
did you know that the Scottish national animals are, or like whatever mascot is, a unicorn? So using that horn for some good.
I did know that, and that's still the craziest fucking thing. Like, I don't think you should be allowed.
A dragon.
I just don't think you should be allowed to have magical animals on to represent your country.
A stupid lion.
Look, at least it's real. I can go to a zoo and see a lion. I have to go to like a 2-bit circus to see a unicorn, and then it's not real. So that's unfortunate to say the least.
I quite like that it's a unicorn.
Look, I get it, but I don't know. I had one of the kids today ask me what I didn't like about monarchies.
Where does it begin?
Yeah, and I was like, because they're stupid. Why would you ever let anyone run your country by virtue of what vagina they came out of?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Not that they really run much in this monarchy anyway, but... Yeah, it's totally pointless, archaic institute. It's just stupid. It's so stupid.
Yeah. Well, you guys have, you know, the constitutional monarchy, which, you know, obviously the way to go.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have any real input.
Yeah.
Which is quite good. At least as far as I know, I don't think they do. So that's one thing, I suppose. But then look who we do have in charge. So, you know, it's... You know, six of one and half dozen of the other.
Sure. Yeah, look, nary a perfect world to be found. like, you know, you see what's going on over here in this country. And
I mean, yeah.
It's a fucking nightmare.
Yep.
Right. One choice is bad and the other is catastrophic. So you do the math.
I don't like that math. I've never been good at math, and I don't like what you're summing up there.
No, it sucks. All right, we should get around to actually talk about this movie. And also, okay, so we're talking about Near Dark, Catherine Bigelow's Near Dark.
Yeah.
And I get the impression that you either had not seen it very much or were not a fan.
No, I just hadn't seen it.
Ever?
No.
Oh, really?
I thought I had, but I hadn't. I don't know what I was getting it confused with, but I was getting it confused with something. No, I hadn't seen it.
Because when I brought it up, you were like, yeah, okay. And I was like, really? That seems like a tepid reaction to Near Dark.
Oh, no. Do you know what it was? I was, when you were messaging me, I had a million things going on, and I was just like, yeah, cool. That sounds great. You know, kind of thing.
Right,
like,
right,
yeah,
right. Okay. Going for efficiency.
Yeah, in that moment, yeah. But no, I hadn't seen it. It had been, it had been one that I thought I had seen. I think possibly as well, because I thought I'd seen it, but I like didn't overly like remember. I thought I hadn't overly remembered it. I was just kind of like, yep, okay, cool, that sounds good, you know, sort of thing. But like, no, I hadn't seen it. But I did really like it. It was a very different sort of vampire film on a road trip.
Exactly. And I thought that made it kind of interesting because, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about is going on trips with, you know, in quotes, loved ones or people that you're involved with.
Yeah.
Because that, my friend, is a real weenie shrinker, I think is what the scientists call it. Because it's like that. It's one of those relationship hurdles that's like, okay, this is either going to kill it or we're going to get past it. Because traveling with someone, it's not being intimate. It is being intimate, but it's a different kind of intimacy. It's not just like we're going to fuck and stuff, but it's like we're going to pack together and like lay out our shit together. And
it's your first kind of like time of basically kind of living with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as well, how people behave at an airport shows their true colors.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Presumably the trip you're going is, you know, involves an airport. But like, you know, my dad is a nightmare in an airport. Like he's so oblivious and he just wanders off.
Where?
To wherever it is, where he's going to the gate. So he doesn't like, he's quite a fast walker.
Uh-huh.
And he just goes off and he doesn't let you kind of like keep pace. He just he's off. And you're like, all right, cool. I guess I'll see you on the flight then, dad, fucker. You know, like, and he'll just be like, oh, I'll just be like, you get through security or whatever. And he'll be like, oh, I'll just be back in a minute. And it's just like, where's your father? Where's he gone? What's he doing? You know? And then like, and he gets really like irritable about things as well. Like if the queue's too long, he's like, oh, it's just ridiculous.
Dad's gone. Mom, can you get dad?
Yeah, like, and you know, and he just, oh, and like, especially like since he's moved to Greece, my parents live in Greece, they retired out there. And like, here's this thing. Because in Greece, it's perfectly acceptable to do this. I'm like, yeah, but dad, you're not in Greece right now. And you just come off as an asshole. If you want someone's attention, like a server or like an assist, like, you know, you need some assistance in some sort of like, you know, public space. Mm-hmm. Clicks fingers.
Oh, I hate that. That's yeah. Quite rude.
Like that. It's really rude, but it's acceptable. It's the only way you can do it in Greece because everyone's really loud all the time. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of, you put your finger, you know, you make eye contact, you click at them. And like, oh, it's the most, just, you want the whole world to cave in over you. Mm-hmm. When he does that. Cause like, you can see on whoever he's clicking at face, like, yeah. Okay. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. He doesn't understand. He's not from around here. You know, like,
he was kicked by a goat.
Yeah. And I'm just like, dad, you can't fucking do that. And he's like, oh, it's all right. I'm like, dude, dad, it's fucking not all right. It's not fucking all right. You know, like, and he doesn't mean it in a horrible way. It's just, he's lived there for the last like 12 years. And it's just now that's just what he does. So like, it's things like that. So like my dad's just basically, my dad is a lovely bloke. I don't want to like, you know, slag him off too much, but like when he has a sort of thing in mind, like he kind of forgets about all the other people around him and he's just like, right, that's that, I want to do that, I'm mm-hmm. over there. And he doesn't really communicate or let you know where he is or what he's doing. He just walks off. It's just like, for fuck's sake. So yeah, that's my dad. So like when we've like gone on holiday and things, me and my mum have like, when especially when I was like younger and stuff, I don't really holiday with my parents so much anymore. Well, I do actually. That's all I do because I go over and visit them. But like, I don't go on holiday with them so much anymore. But like, it'd be me and my mum and we'd just be like, right, we'll keep hold of our bags. We're keeping hold of our passports. Your dad can do what the fuck he wants. We're going to go and get some food. You know, like, it'd just be one of those. But yeah, I feel like when you're with someone, especially when it's like in a relationship and especially if it's like the first time mm-hmm. you're going away with them, it's like you see everything because presumably you haven't moved in yet. And, you know, so you're sharing a bathroom. You're with them all the time. You're, you know, even if it isn't a very idyllic kind of like, you know, environment, you're hot. You're in a, like, you know, you might be, presumably you're hot, like, in England, we always go to hot places because it's always so cold here. So, mm-hmm. You know, generally speaking, it's hot and like you've been traveling and you've, you know, in an unknown country and, you know, even though you are relaxing, stresses can be a little bit higher and things. So, yeah, it's an interesting experience for sure. Have you been on many holidays with like loved ones, partners, and such.
Yeah, I like as you were talking, like, I had such a wash of memories. One is, I don't think my parents ever went on vacation together.
Really?
Yeah, as I'm thinking about it now, I don't think they ever did.
So they would just vacation like separately?
No, I don't think they ever went on vacation.
Huh. Do you not do that so much in America?
No, we do. They just didn't. And because we took vacations as kids, we would go with my grandparents all over the place. Nice. So like we would go to like Disney World and the mountains and all kinds of stuff. But now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh yeah, we always did that when I was a kid with my grandparents. My parents actually never went anywhere.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's weird. My parents, we used to go away every year, every summer. We'd go away. We would go to the south of France, or we would go to, like, later on, we then went to Greece, and then that's when my parents decided they wanted to move there. Occasionally, my granddad, when I was younger, he'd come to the south of France with us, and every now and then my nan has come away with us, but I wouldn't be going away with my grandparents. And and that's my mum's side. My dad's parents they fucking barely left the house. Because they were just old and hermity. Yeah, I always went away with my folks.
Well, so that was one thing that came up. The other is this, and I may have told this story before, but I'll keep this short. The one time, I've traveled with a number of people that I've dated over the years. And in some cases, it was great. So let me start here. Maybe the best trip that I ever had with somebody that I was involved with, but we'd been dating a while before we went on the trip, and we went to New York, and nice. Yeah, it was really fun. Like, she had to go for a conference, and so I met her like a day after she got there.
Yeah.
And then we just spent the weekend in New York, and it was a great time. But the thing was, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I don't know that we fucked on that trip. I think it was great. We had a wonderful time. But I think that we were just so fucking tired at the end of every day. I don't know that and like I said, we'd been dating long enough that we, you know, if
you
we
were past
didn't,
the rip each other's clothes off stage or something.
Right. But still, it was New York. Yeah. And we should have, but we didn't, because we were old and tired. But then I've had, I had another trip with, and it was real early in the relationship, and it was just fucking disastrous, the whole trip. It was like a weekend away where we were just, like, going to go and hang out. And it was one of those, like, one thing after another of, like, oh, this isn't going to work out. And that sucked. Like, and both of us kind of knew it.
Yeah.
And it was the worst part of, because we had taken a trip to go, we rented a cabin together and, and like hung out and like shopped during the day and all that kind of fun stuff. And on the way back though, like that car was fucking silent. It was rough, because like neither of us really had much to say. We both knew, like, oh, this is probably going to be over with. And
were you just kind of like sick of each other's company by that point?
It was a combination of like sick of each other's company and really bummed out that it didn't work out. Because like initially we went into that weekend, I think both of us were like, this could be something. And then by the end of it, we were like, this is absolutely not a thing. But it's good. Like putting a relationship under that kind of pressure, you know, it's like putting a coal under pressure to see if it forms a diamond or just turns into dust. and that's how this was. It just became dust. But I don't know. What about you? Have you ever had it like a vacation with a romantic partner that just went way better than anticipated?
No.
I, yeah. I, as I think about it, I think you can only lose.
The only I've had two good trips. I wouldn't say better than anticipated, but just as anticipated.
Uh-huh.
One of them was the first time I went away with a partner, and it was actually super sweet. It was my 21st birthday, and we had only been dating for about 2 months, and he had secretly planned this whole weekend away to Paris. Booked a 4-star hotel, everything, had arranged with my boss to get me the annual leave so that like I didn't know anything. He told me what weather it might be just so I knew what to pack.
Mm-hmm.
But like that was it. Although bless him, he got too excited, and he'd been holding on to the secret for like about a month, and he checked in with all of my friends to, hey, would Kate like this? And so they all were keeping the secret. He asked my parents whether it would be okay, because it was my first time away out of the country with a partner, and like they were, and so everyone knew but me. And 2 days before we were due to go, he got too excited, and he slipped up with where we were going.
Oh no.
Yeah, but I was so excited, like I actually was quite glad, because like it meant that I could pack a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Concisely. And also as well, I kind of just had that couple of days to just build up that excitement. He was so pissed off with himself though. But we got there, and it was a really, really wonderful weekend. And it was over Valentine's, because my birthday's February 10th. And so it was over Valentine's weekend, and we had this incredible meal on Valentine's Day, which was the Saturday, and we went and did all the touristy stuff. And it was quite funny because we did have sex a lot. And
nobody likes a braggart.
Oh, well, I'm about to get humbled real quick.
Uh-oh.
So we were having sex, and he wanted to do the the relatively, I think, optimistic thing of pulling out and then getting it into my mouth.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that's a pro move.
Yeah, right. So that's what he wanted to do. I was just like, yeah, okay. And then he misses and it shoots up my nose. It fucking hurts so much.
Really? Like, how so? Did it? Certainly, I wouldn't think it stinks.
Back of your throat still.
Oh, sure.
Not the way that God intended. And like, it just. I was just like, like I had to rush to the bathroom, and I was like hocking up and sneezing, and just it was just too much fluid in all of my fucking sinuses, and like, and I was just like, what the fuck? Like, you had one job, and like, yeah, it was just a bit of a. I mean, I can laugh about it and stuff, and late the next day we were laughing about it, but at the time I was just like,
that's really funny.
Oh my god, yeah, like literally, like. I've had it in the eye before, and honestly, I think the nose is worse. Like when it comes at that velocity as well,
mm-hmm.
just it kind of, yeah, it's just kind of like the tobacco spit, you know, like it just like goes through my nose and then like hits off the back of my fucking throat somehow, and yeah, just a whole thing. Like it's just. Yeah. And then.
I mean, like, you know, who among us has not had that moment where you're like, okay, what would I prefer, come in the nose or come in the eye?
I feel like you don't grow as a person unless you've had that question answered.
Right. Asked and answered. Yes.
Charles and Arid. And then the other one was with the sociopath a couple of years ago. And that's all I'll refer to him as now, mm-hmm. especially as I've started dating somebody with the same name. Mm-hmm. So start dating. We've had 2 dates, and it's very, very, very early days, kind of casual, but you know, we'll see.
But sounds anyway. Good. Sounds good.
But yeah, so it sounds good so far. It's got lots of green flags. As opposed to this guy who was just a walking red flag. But yeah, we went to his parents' caravan in Cornwall with two of our friends who are also a couple. And there were 2 bedrooms. Right next to each other, and caravan walls are not thick. They are essentially a sheet of metal.
Uh-huh.
And so you can hear everything. And like the, I don't know, first or second night we were there, we were essentially marathoning each other.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they could hear us, we could hear them. And we were like, you know, essentially having a competition about who could make the girl come more.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a bit where like I was okay, so I was on top.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting a bit tired, so I hopped off and went to give him some head. Mm-hmm. Just to give myself a little bit of a chill time. And apparently all they could hear in the other room was the breathing and moaning and everything stopping. And then about 2 seconds later, all they heard was, "Ooh, a blowjob."
Oh, delightful.
Yeah. And then apparently that was just them done, because they were just laughing too hard that they just couldn't continue, and I declared us the winner.
Sure.
And there were loads of, there were a few things that trip. Like, we came back from a dinner, we were all, so we drove down in our mate's car, and she was driving, giving her partner a hand job in the front seat while the sociopath was fingering me in the back seat.
Mm-hmm.
It was very it's all very incestuous. And so we got in, we quickly departed. We thought that they were just gonna have like, they were having like, I was like, we were on about, oh, when we get back we'll like play some drinking games and whatever. And they went in their bedroom, so we were like, oh well, okay, if they're doing that, then let's, you know, we were in the, like the living space, like the, you know, the communal space. Mm-hmm. Turns out they weren't doing anything. They were just having a bit of a change of clothes and freshening up kind of thing. They came out into the living space ready to play drinking games to find the sociopath between my legs while I'm sat on the sofa. I hadn't been wearing underwear at all that night, by the way.
Sure.
So, because of course. And so he was going down on me. He hops up and I'm like, oh, shit. And I'm still sat down. And a couple of seconds goes by and the other guy turns around and is like, Kate's forgotten she's not wearing underwear, doesn't she? I was like, oh, shit. I just quickly closed my legs and because like, I was wearing a skirt, and he was kind of like, you know, but it was a short skirt.
Sure.
Yeah, and he was like, yeah, Kate's forgotten that she's not wearing underwear, hasn't she? And I was just like, oh, fuck. Hey. So that's quite funny. That's something that we still bring up now, because I'm still friends with the other two. So, yeah, it's just like, yeah, well, you know.
I mean, I like, as far as sex on trips goes, I like a good hotel bed, and I secretly always hope somebody's in the next room. You know, like,
an exhibitionist, eh?
I don't want to interact with them, but in the back of my head, I'm like, it's kind of fun to be that couple that's like, I wish they would just go to bed already. You know? Yeah. It's fun. I like feeling like you're making somebody else's trip more interesting.
Yeah. Or just more depressing because they're not having great sex.
Sure, you know. And I as always encourage the lack of underwear in all its guises.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, apart from anything else, it was for practical reasons too, because I was wearing a very kind of like fitted, you know, figure hugging dress.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want a VPL, and I don't mind thongs, but I don't know. I just find them. If you don't sit right in a thong, you'll know this, Bo.
Sure,
if you
sure,
don't
sure.
sit right yeah. in yeah. a thong.
Yeah. I was going to bring this up earlier.
Yeah. No, I did it for you, man. You're welcome. if you sit awkwardly on a thong, that can like, it's like the worst fucking wedge. And I've even, I think we're past the point of saying oversharing in the show.
Sure.
But like, I've even once like cut myself with a thong.
Ew. From
just sitting down, just like, you know, like just like a real bad wedge. So it's always kind of, I'll wear a thong if I have to for whatever reason. Like, you know, if a partner has a real thing for him or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if I'm choosing either if the other alternative is no underwear, I'll go no underwear. Like if I can't wear other types of underwear because of, I don't know, a VPL mm-hmm. or something, then I'll just opt to wear no underwear. Because it's way more comfortable.
Yeah, I can see that.
And if you're on a date, it's also very sexy, so.
Sure, well, right, especially if the date starts going well and you get to drop that little bomb.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's your move? How do you let that go? Or do you just show? Oh my god.
What did I do that time? I think I tend to just do the lean in and whisper.
Okay. By the way. All right. Yeah.
And then like I'll just like walk away
mm-hmm.
to go get a drink from the bar or something. But like one time I did that. I was meeting my ex for the first time because we met online
mm-hmm.
and we were meeting in Bristol Temple Meads, which is this massively busy train station. It's huge. It's constantly like everyone's everywhere. It's like a really big sort of hub. And I thought, hey, what would be really sexy is if I wear this like bodycon tight fitted dress, stockings, mm-hmm. heels, and no underwear, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't anticipate was when we met, kissing him and then him bend me over, like tip me over, like in that very romantic.
Oh, sure. Thing. Yeah.
But to keep balance, like, because I was in stupidly high heels, I know this sounds weird to keep balance, you take your foot off the ground, but just to kind of level yourself out. But I was so aware that my skirt had ridden up and I was wearing no underwear and stockings in the middle of rush hour at 5 p.m. on a fucking Friday in one of the most busy train stations in the Southwest. So, like, it was fun still, but I was like, should we go? I want to go now. Let's go.
Right. Well, you know, again, you're giving everybody something to think about on the way home.
I mean, yeah, there is that.
You may have unintentionally created a romantic mood for some of those people who then took it home to their spouses.
Ooh.
And then like unwittingly you could have generated, you know, 1,000 orgasms.
I could have.
Anyway.
You're right.
I like the idea of this. I like
Yeah. I mean, I'm nothing if not a philanthropist.
Do you think that's what it would be called? Philanthropism is, or philanthropy? Yeah,
why not? I mean, there's no money or anything involved, but I feel like I sold my dignity.
Philanthropenus? There's something there.
Yeah, there's a joke in there somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Let's just work it out.
Which is to say that Near Dark is a movie.
It is.
But yeah, I mean, it is a road trip. And as much as I can, you know, segue somewhat organically, but yeah, it's a road trip movie. Like you said, it's a vampire film first and foremost, where we have Adrian Pazdar is our yeah. star, which is a sentence that you almost never hear.
Stop it.
I mean, he's fine, but he's just, you know, like watching yeah. this movie. Here's the thing about Near Dark, and this may seem controversial, but you know, this show is nothing if not one hot take after another.
Absolutely.
I think the side characters in this movie are way more interesting than the main characters.
Oh my god, yeah, absolutely. Like, yes.
Like Bill Paxton and Lance Henriksen and Jeanette Goldstein and Tim yeah. Thomerson as the like Doll Man himself.
Yeah.
Jack Death agreed. Himself, Tim Thomerson.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and so like all of those characters are kind of more interesting. But yeah, so this dude named Caleb meets May, played by yeah. Jenny Wright. And, you know, they're doing a little bit of flirting and teasing. One thing leads to another and, you know, sexy vampire things happen. Mm-hmm. And she decides she is going to induct him into the world of vampirism, which is not unlike the plot of Kiss of the Damned, really.
Yeah, yeah, I drew that comparison as well.
Although I would also argue Kiss of the Damned is the sexier movie.
100%. Definitely. Did I tell you I bought that, by the way?
Oh, good.
Yeah, I bought it on Blu-ray.
That's a movie it's been just long enough that I'm about ready to go back and revisit it.
Yeah.
Because that movie is hot.
I might suggest it for a movie night with this new person.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And then have him chain you up later.
Yeah.
And you do like growls.
Just like that.
Well, all right. That's more my kink. So Caleb and May end up kind of running off together along with her, in quotes, family, who is basically the cast of the movie Aliens.
Yes.
It's Lance Henriksen as Jesse Hooker.
Yeah, what a great name.
That's real good. There's Bill Paxton as Severin.
Yep.
And Jeanette Goldstein plays Diamondback.
Yeah.
Because apparently they're also all assassins from the Kill Bill universe.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. I'm still, Jesse Hooker's my favorite name.
And then you've got Homer, played by Joshua John Miller, who is a child actor. And in Interview with the Vampire fashion, it is that story of, hey, I am trapped in a young body, but I am now an old man.
Yeah, it also kind of gave me Buffy vibes with the Anointed a little bit.
Yeah.
From early days, season one, well, end of season one, beginning of season two.
Yeah, see,
That's a lie. It is end of season one, beginning of season two. Yeah, I was right.
I'm about ready for a Buffy rewatch as well.
I'm always ready for a Buffy rewatch.
I mean, you can always do worse.
27 years ago on Sunday it first aired, just saying.
Oh, really?
Oh, no, Friday.
This Friday is as in last say, Friday. 37 years?
27 years. 27, that's not aging me too much.
Okay. Old enough now to rent a car. Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
27?
Well, it's 25 in the U.S., but, you know.
Really? Mm-hmm. You just have to have a license here.
Now, you have to...
No, that's a lie. No, you can't. You just have to pay more on the insurance if you're under 25.
Yeah, they don't even let you if you're until you're 25 in the U.S. Unless that law has changed. That could have changed. I'm not even sure what's illegal anymore. We are in Europe,
all free and easy. This was, I don't know what it's like now, but when I rented a car to drive around Germany, I was 25, but my mate who wasn't quite 25, we were going to share it, but the insurance was just going to cost double if we put her on, so I did all the driving. But yeah, that was 10 years ago now, so.
Yeah,
So I don't know.
It might
changed, but yeah.
Yeah. So
anyway.
Yeah. So yeah. A lot of, and the thing is, like, Near Dark is 87, and so it kind of predates a lot of the stuff that you, like, the stuff that we're talking about sort of reminds us of other films in Near Dark.
Oh, after this. Yeah,
right.
Like, Interview with the Vampires after this. Buffy's obviously after this. Yeah.
No, right.
Like,
it was all kind of inspired by Near Dark, which is it's one of those movies that I don't love it, but it's kind of fascinating. I like it. There's a lot of good stuff in it.
Mm.
One scene in particular is fucking great, but the movie as a whole, like I said, I don't think the two leads are always the most compelling. And that's, you know, a problem when it's the leads of your film.
I only think it's a problem if, because as you said, in this one, like, the side characters are so rich. I think it's okay because we have these really cool side characters. But I think if, like, the side characters, even if they were cool, but they weren't kind of this interesting, then it would pose more of a problem for me, because I can empathize enough with the two leads' plight for me to kind of like care about them as characters, but I'm getting my entertainment from the others, you know?
Yeah. So here's what's crazy. So Near Dark, directed by Catherine Bigelow, like we said, who went on to win an Oscar for The Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
So, and this movie is really well directed. Like it's,
oh yes, it's so well shot.
Yeah, it's a beautiful looking movie. Yeah, like it uses a lot of like southwestern vistas and a lot of natural beauty to help with the production of a movie that's not very expensive.
And yeah, she uses all the weapons in her arsenal, doesn't she?
Yeah, and I think she was married to James Cameron at the time, or was involved with James Cameron at the time.
Oh, right, okay.
And so the reason that you see a lot of actors from Alien show up in this is because she knew them through her husband.
Yeah, fair.
And also written by Eric Red, whose movie before this one was The Hitcher.
Oh, really?
Which
oh,
is okay. another road trip movie yeah. through the Southwest.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool.
So, you know, learn a little something listening to this show.
We're edutainment.
Edutainment, exactly. So... They're off on the road. May and I almost said Jesse Hooker. May and Caleb are with Jesse and Severin and Diamondback and Homer, and they're basically teaching Caleb, the main character, how to be a vampire.
Yeah.
And they're kind of these nomads out. I mean, it's very like Old West inspired, where they're, you know, these outlaws driving around the Southwest, you know, killing their way when they need to feed.
Oh, they also, as well, another thing that came afterwards, gave me True Knot vibes too.
Mm-hmm.
Just their dynamic and the way that they're kind of nomads, and they all kind of, you know, obviously, like, you know, they don't have Rose the Hat as their leader. That would be cool.
If only.
They wouldn't fucking get involved. Well, they might do actually. It didn't actually end that well for her either. But that kind of like they're a family, and they have like a particular. They're very sort of like insular, and you know they don't like outsiders and all of this kind of stuff. It's just their whole dynamic as a group mm-hmm. reminded me of the True Knot.
Yeah, it's like they're from all these different time periods, but they're, you know, hanging out together. There's a touch of Lost Boys in it.
I got that too. I don't know whether it was just because it was like the 80s and like the sort of the aesthetic of it, kind of like a bit kind of cowboyish and whatever. Like not cowboyish in the Wild Wild West, but their characters are very just sort of like on the lam. And
yeah. And this is the same year. Both these movies came out in the same year.
Yeah.
So it's not like one was inspired by the other. They both just kind of captured this. Like you said, it's a very 80s kind of vibe. And also this very, like there are kids involved in both.
Yeah.
There's that sense of like a pack of vampires, a nest of vampires, if you will. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if Near Dark didn't suffer because Lost Boys came out in the summer.
Possibly, but Lost Boys is the better film.
I don't disagree with that. Like, I'm not over the moon for Lost Boys, but I do think it's better than this. but still, you know, there was something in the water, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of these kinds of vampire movies where... and even Lost Boys was a little bit sexy. Like, this is a little bit sexy, and it's not just, you know, vampires coming for you. There's a little bit of shared DNA there. Although this one has 100% less half-naked saxophone players.
and it suffers for it.
Right. The lesser for it, sure. But what I do like is in the journey to teach Caleb how to be a vampire, there is the bar scene, and the bar scene is fucking rad.
Yeah, I thought that's what you were talking about when you said about it. Yeah, yeah. It's very, very good.
Because they roll up in there and, you know, it's a bunch of vampires in this, like, shit-kicker bar in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And immediately know, like, it, you can see on their faces, it is the confidence of, we have done this a bunch of times before.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the first or the last bar that we will clean out of rednecks. And, like, we're going to basically pick a fight with a group of people who have no idea what they're about to get into.
Yeah, it's that kind of, again, it's that sort of like that kind of cockiness,
mm-hmm.
That kind of bravado of like, yeah, we're going to fuck shit up, you know, and like, you can't do anything. No repercussions are going to happen. We are free to do whatever the fuck we want. And like, even if you don't know it yet, you will, you know, like, it's very that. And this, and the way, especially like Severin and stuff, and Severin is like the real kind of wild card. And he just, oh my God, like, he's phenomenal in this scene. It's so fucking good.
Yeah. Bill Paxton as Severin is the best part of the movie because he's the most fun character. Like, he loves being a vampire.
He's got such bloodlust.
Yeah. And he's like, and at the end of the movie, he is the most pissed at Caleb because he finally accepts Caleb at a certain point when they're like being chased by the law and the sun and all that stuff. And
yeah, because they don't really accept Caleb because he's really resisting being a vampire. He can't kill anyone. He's never, you know, he keeps getting May to do his kills for him so that he can kind of like feed and things.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, fucking, if you're going to be a vampire, you got to fucking toughen up. And at the moment, you're just a liability. And we're putting up with you for May's sake, but we're not going to make it easy for you. And Severin is really hard on him, especially. He really just doesn't give a fuck. So, yeah. So by the time it gets to a point where he's kind of coming round to him, you know, and then like, yeah, as you say, like, it's, yeah, he gets really pissed off with how things turn out.
Yeah. And feels betrayed, right? Like, you know, we let you into our family and you turned your back on us because at a certain point, after the bar scene, and we should linger there for just a second more, because it really is like Bill Paxton wears these spurs all through the movie.
Yeah.
And we learn that he is using them in these moments to just open up a dude's throat. As he is dancing around on a bar and using these spurs to bleed these fools that are, you know, eye level to his boots. It is.
Yeah.
And he's just having Bill Paxton is having such a good time.
Yeah. 100%. He is absolutely loving life playing this role. And like, I don't blame him either. Like, this is the kind of role that, like, I think gets actors going, you know. It's not necessarily the main part or whatever, but just having these really fun parts where you get to tap into a side of yourself that you might not normally. And like, it's that if I was going to be an actor, this is the type of shit that I'd like to do, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's like, you know, like Bill Paxton certainly starred in movies, but he always felt like a character actor through and through.
Yeah.
That he was most at home doing something like this. And by virtue of how much fun he's having with the performance, he ends up being the thing that you walk away from the movie with. Like, you're like, yeah, the movie's fine, but Bill Paxton's fucking amazing in it.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah, he's so good. But him blood-faced, you know, just like streaked with gore, saying finger licking good,
he's such great one-liners,
all that shit. It's so much fun. He's having such a blast. So yeah, that bar scene is just fucking nuts. And then you know, it is kind of post that our vampires end up being on the run as Tim Thomerson, as Caleb's father, tracks him down along with the daughter. Tim Thomerson's daughter, Caleb's sister, and Homer takes a real shine to her and is like, oh, I can turn her into a vampire. And after a few decades, I'll have another adult trapped in a child's body that I can, you know, have this relationship with. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, no, thanks.
Yeah, and once Caleb gets wind of it, that's where he's like, fuck you, fuck this, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And
he goes back home.
Yeah, and goes back home, and Tim Thomerson uses, like, basically blood transfusions to get the vampiric infection out of him, which I think is kind of an interesting take on it, you know?
Yeah, what I quite enjoyed about that is how it kind of does make a sense. Like, if we're, you know, as much sense we're talking about vampires, you know, because the whole way you become a vampire is essentially through a blood transfusion, you know, to quote Buffy, like, they suck your blood, you suck their blood. It's like a whole big sucking thing. So, you know, it's like you share those fluids. And then, so, I'm listening. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so to have a blood transfusion to sort of essentially, like, override the initial blood transfusion, there is a logic in there. So it's not something that you really, like, I can't think off the top of my head where I've seen that exact thing, but it's like, if it was gonna work that way, like, if it was gonna, if there was a way of being able to reverse vampirism, then that would be a logical way of doing it, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of goofy science, but it's kind of science.
Yeah, I mean, it's science in a world where vampires are real, you know.
Yeah, right, exactly. But yeah, so he's okay, and then finally we have a big showdown where, like, you know, May tracks him down with the rest of the family, and
yeah, I love this bit too.
And, you know, it feels very, speaking of James Cameron, there's some real Terminator vibes.
Yeah,
in the last act. And it's all really good and fun, and, like, you know, Bill Paxton gets blowed the fuck up, and yeah. You know,
Caleb takes a spur,
right? And at the end of the day, you know, like, Caleb manages to get May, like, humanized again.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I like that.
Yeah, it's
it just seems to be, like, too tied up, you know, in a neat bow.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that hamstrings this movie, you know, aside from, hey, the side characters like Bill Paxton and Lance Henriksen and Jeanette Goldstein, like, are all way more interesting characters, and even Homer is kind of a more interesting character than leads.
Yeah.
And the other problem, I think, is that it's way more fun being on the road with the vampires than the love story or the resolution. And so when you end on the love story, you're like, eh, okay, fine. I was never really invested in that to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. It sort of, it almost becomes like a side thing. Like, their love story almost becomes like a side story, because what I want to see is, what I'm sort of more invested in is the survival of this vampire group. And also as well, to an extent, like where Caleb's morals lie, mm-hmm. and like where's he going to draw that line. I by that point had really kind of like, I just don't care about that relationship anymore.
Yeah,
more interesting things are going on. So when it, like, they brought it back, I was just like, oh yeah, okay, cool, you know, like, I'd have probably rather have seen, like, him realize, like, if anything, I would rather have seen, like, him realize that, like, his life was more exciting and he was going to get to go see the world and everything through different eyes, and, like, get her to change him back. And okay. Like, but the threat of the gang has gone, so he knows his sister's safe, you know, that's okay. His mm-hmm. family kind of understand, they can say a proper goodbye, closure, all the rest of it, and then he can go off and live his best vampire life with his missus and not, like, try and change her.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the most frustrating things is when a movie forgets what the fun part of the movie is.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are we screwing around with, you know, oh my God, is this, you know, transfusion from Dollman gonna work?
Yeah.
When we could be hanging out with Bill Paxton and fucking up bars. Like, yeah. Why are we not with them? The movie needed to be from their perspective, I think, and it would be a different movie, but it would be a much more entertaining movie.
Or just have it that, like, you know, everyone dies and the vampires escape and they're free to rain hell on everything.
Like he gets free of it, you know, maybe brings May along with him, and that's how you play it, as opposed to, you know, like, we're gonna have the big showdown. But
I did like the big showdown, though.
Yeah, I do too. Like, it is cool, but it, like, if that's the case, then
skin and everything, you know.
Yeah, one of them needs to die then. Like if you're gonna get, or May has to kill, be the one to kill, like, Jesse.
Yeah. There has to be some sort of sacrifice somewhere.
Right.
I think this is what bothered me, that there was nothing. There was no, everything just kind of, I don't want to say came easy, but, like, for a movie about vampires, it kind of came easy.
They get away too clean.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that they're, like you said, there needs to be a sacrifice made, and it doesn't feel like that has ever happened in the movie, or at least not from the main characters. But that's not to say the movie is bad. In fact, just the opposite. It's really good. And if you've never seen Near Dark, you should see Near Dark, because there's still great stuff in it, and it's beautiful to look at. And the it's got, like, a Tangerine Dream soundtrack, and, like, it's stylish as fuck.
Yeah.
And I like that style, but it is, it just has its flaws. And there are other vampire movies that kind of came after that perfected sort of what it's going for. Maybe not exactly. Like, I could see somebody making a really good remake of Near Dark.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Agreed.
And who do you cast as Severin? Like, that's the thing. Who has...
if you had... do you know what? I could see... you know what? This is not now, but maybe, like, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Someone like either Christian Slater.
Mm, yeah, okay.
Or Timothy Oliphant.
Yep. I could, Timothy Oliphant may be a little old at this point.
This is what I mean. Like, that's what I mean, like, 10, 15 years ago. Now? I don't know.
Right. It's tough. It's a tough role to cast, because they've got to be able to be scary and also kind of goofy.
Yeah.
And Sam Rockwell would be great, but he's too old.
Yeah.
But it's that vibe, right? It's the, Gary Oldman back in the day could have done a good Severin.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll have to, listeners, send me or Kate a message and tell us who should be Severin in the remake of Near Dark that will inevitably happen.
Yeah, when we fund it and direct it ourselves.
Oh, boy. Wouldn't that be good?
Be good.
Yeah, like, listeners, send us, I don't know, what do you think, $5 million? $5 million.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, that'll do.
Give us $5 million. We're going to go make a remake of Near Dark.
We'll set up a GoFundMe.
Yes, and if we can't secure the rights, we'll call it Near Dusk.
Yes, perfect.
And that way it is legal, it's all on the up and up.
Yeah, 100%. And we're going to change it enough that they can't say that it's the same script.
Yeah, absolutely. Instead of in the Southwest, we'll put ours in the Southeast, and we're driving around, like, Georgia and Louisiana.
Yeah, we're going to do it from the vampire's perspective.
Oh, definitely.
And the ending will be different, so, yeah.
Yeah, legally distinct, I think, is the way
that we can... Is that the term?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a legally distinct property.
Yeah. Definitely. I'm trying to think of an actor now. That's annoying.
It's tough.
I'm looking at all my Blu-rays and it's like everyone's just too old. I'm just still living in, like, the 90s and the 2000s.
And everything can't be Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, Jesus, no. And he wouldn't be able to do this anyway. He's far too somber.
And too frail. He's got, like, little bird bones.
I almost want Bill Skarsgård, but I don't know.
You know, even an Alexander Skarsgård might be all right for this. He seems like he could pull that off.
I don't know. I reckon he's a bit too old now.
Yeah, you're probably right. God,
Everyone, this is what I mean. Everyone's too fucking old.
Yeah.
I thought everyone stayed young in Hollywood. Aren't they supposed to be some sort of, like, part of some sort of blood cult?
Hey, look at Nicole Kidman. She hasn't aged a day.
She hasn't.
I mean,
she's beautiful. Neither is fucking Tom Cruise, though, so what's that about?
I don't know. I watched that last Mission Impossible movie, and there are
really?
Yeah,
I haven't seen it.
There are a couple of scenes where it looks like Tom Cruise only slightly melted. You know, it's, yeah, he's getting that 50s, like, everything's just starting to sag a little bit, and there's, you know, like, and he, but I like the fact that he's not, if he's getting any work done, it is subtle and it is professional.
Yeah.
And it's not like all of a sudden he goes from, hey, I'm, you know, almost 60 to I look 45 and surprised all the time. So
yeah, he's not pulling any John Travolta's.
No. Like, every now and again, like, Joe Biden will get, like, one of them clothespins at the back of the head to tighten everything up on his face, and it's like, oh wow, you, like, all of your wrinkles are gone, but you still look old, and that's weird. Yeah. That's an unsettling combination of factors.
Like Benjamin Button.
Yeah. Every now and again, it's Benjamin Biden. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like one of those things where, hang on, you have to double take, like, my eyes are playing tricks on me kind of thing. This looks like an old man.
Right.
Well, there's something not right there.
Right, but there are no wrinkles, so it looks like a very old baby.
Yes, exactly.
And that is, like you said, it's a Benjamin Button scenario, and that's creepy as hell.
It is very creepy, yeah.
And also, just not very narratively satisfying. one of the few Fincher missteps in the filmography, I would wager. Anyway, so anything else about traveling, or do we move on to Tinder is the Flesh? I don't want to sell you short at any point.
Oh, no. Anything about traveling? Anything else? Anything else happened in that trip that's worth noting? No, those were sort of like the two funnier moments. No, I mean, one time I was the person who was the asshole on holiday.
How so?
we went on, so this is me and, like, my first, this is the same guy who took me to Paris. We were about 4 years into the relationship now, though.
Uh-huh.
And definitely on the way out. Mm-hmm. And we were in, where do we even go? Tenerife, I think. And, we went on one of those all day excursions, you know, where you're in a coach all day and it just drops you off at different places, picks you up, drops you off, picks you up kind of mm-hmm. thing. And they had the hotel had, like, sorted us out a lunch, as you do with these kind of things. We were up at, like, 5 a.m. To leave at something like 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
It was like one of those real full-on days. It was hot as shit. It was hot on the coach. Heat is one of the things that gets me irritable. being hungry is the other. And we had eaten the lunch, but we didn't get back until something like 10 p.m. And we were staying in this little kind of, like, hotel that was sort of out of the way of everything. It was one of those, like, all-inclusive resort places. And we got home later than they had said. We were supposed to be getting back at 8, and we got back at 10. Kitchen shut at 9:30. And I was in just the worst mood because I was hot, tired, and hungry. Three things that you do not want to see me experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, right, I want to just preface it. I am aware that my behavior was not acceptable. I am aware that it was not this person's fault. But I went into the kitchen, they were clearing everything up, and I was just like, oh my God, like, I just need some food. And it's like, we're really sorry, the kitchens are closed, we don't have anything. And even though it was all inclusive, they didn't do room service. It wasn't anything, like, once the kitchen was closed, that was it, the kitchen was closed. But there wasn't even anywhere nearby that we could pop to the shop or pop for something to eat. Do you know what I mean? It was literally one of those hotels where it's like, we've chosen this location, so you have to stay here. Mm-hmm. And I literally just lost my shit at this guy. And I was just like, what? I was like, I don't care what it is that you give me. Just give me some bread, some butter. I don't care. Just give me some fun. I've been out all day. And I literally just like lost my rag at this guy. And he got his manager.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And like in the meantime, he lost his manager. Like my boyfriend at the time was just like, what the fuck, Kate? And I'm just like, I don't care. And he's just like, Kate, you're being so unreasonable. What the fuck? He was just like, just we'll have something at breakfast. I'm like, I need something now. I was being such a fucking cunt. And then by the time his manager came out, as typical with these sorts of things, I had calmed down.
Sure.
A little bit to be like, look, like I was still pretty pet up, but I was like, look, we have been out all day. Your hotel provided us a lunch for an X amount trip and it ended up being a Y amount length of time. I am starving. I just need some food. I feel sick. Just, I don't care. Give me some bread. And like, he was like, okay. And he went out and he literally just got me one of those like tiny little bread rolls.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that you get, like, you know, when you have a buffet and they're just sort of like piled up.
Mm-hmm.
One of those little bread rolls and like one little packet of butter. And he just shoved it into my hands. He was like, there. And I was like, thank you. And just like walked off. And then obviously, like, me and my then partner had a major row. And then the next day I tried to find the guy and apologize, but I couldn't find him. He probably quit that night.
That was his last night. He
that
left,
was, yeah.
Left the city, role. Moved back to the farm. Had enough of rude.
I was so rude. I say I am not justifying anything. That poor guy, like, I did once I'd eaten and got some sleep and got back to a normal temperature, I was a human again, and mm-hmm. I felt awful. I guess it must have just been like one of those like total shift changeovers, because the manager wasn't there either, the same one. But I spoke to a manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look, whoever was working last night, can you please tell them I'm just so sorry, because I was being well out of order. I was just really, 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 really hungry. But yeah, no, I was not. So I was the asshole on that trip. And I don't think me and my partner was together for the next summer. I think we broke up that year.
Yeah.
But I broke up with him though, so, you know.
Had a thing. All right, we can move on to Tinder after this, and this won't take but a second. But so there was one trip I took with a girlfriend of mine, and we were in Chicago for a wedding that like it was a friend of hers or somebody in her family or something. It had to be somebody in her family because a lot of her family was around. But it was such a miserable time with her. Because she went off her rocker a little bit, and I think it was just the pressure of the situation, et cetera, et cetera. But mm-hmm. I knew, like, oh, this is over with. But it was one of those situations where, like, I know that the relationship is over, but she doesn't know that.
Oh,
and we're on a plane back from Chicago to Nashville,
right?
And I'm like, As soon as we land, I'm going to do this.
Oh,
and the whole time.
You're not even going to let her have like a day back?
No, because as soon as, I know that's fucked up, but it was also like, what is the point? Like, this was terrible. I don't want to waste another day. just putting this off. Like, because it sucks. Like, I hate breaking up with anybody. And yeah, I hate it. It's one of the worst fucking things. Every time that I'm in a situation where I'm breaking up with somebody, I feel like total shit about it.
Same.
And so I was very much like, I just need to rip the Band-Aid here and be done with this, because
yeah,
I feel sick about it. And
mm-hmm.
so, yeah, it was awful. But
yeah, I do get that, in fairness.
But it sucked. You're right. But there's no easy way to do it. Like, there's no right time.
No,
you know, at a certain point, you know, like, you want to make sure that you're weighing the decision fairly. You're not just popping off at the mouth. But once you know for sure, like, don't sit on that information. Just be like, you know what? I think we're done here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to get my shit and then I'm going to go. And I hope everything goes well for you from here on out. I just won't be around to see it.
Yeah. And thank God.
And yes. And we'll both be better off in the long run.
100%. So, sorry.
Because even if I stayed, I would eventually kill you.
And you'd get away with it as well. You watch a lot of horror. And so.
Right. I would murder you. And I'm thinking about it now, which is why I think we should break up.
Yeah. For your sake. This isn't about me.
Yeah.
This
is for you. Right. It's not you. It's me and my murderous impulses.
Exactly. Yeah. We're such givers.
We're
so selfless.
Once again, we have shown that as partners in a relationship, we are like anyone would be lucky to have us,
right? Me and all my hangry rages.
Yeah,
just keep me. I'm very easily dealt with. Just keep me fed and happy. That's all I ask.
And cool. Yeah,
and an orgasm.
A temperate environment and food.
Yeah, no come up my nose.
And well, you know,
that's just a breezy bonus if you can avoid it.
Sure. Yeah. I don't feel like that's a deal breaker for anyone here.
For some people, it's a turn on. So
right. Sometimes you got to pay extra. Yeah.
So what happened then?
What, the breakup?
Yeah.
Well,
How'd you take it?
I mean, not well. She was like, "But we just had a trip and we had so much fun." I'm like, "Well, one of us did."
I was gonna say, did he?
I like to cite evidence, right? Like, here is why we are breaking up, because you responded to this thing in this way, and this is how I feel. This is what I think that means about how you view the world, and that does not, like, you know, she got real freaked out over me playfully flirting with her like 90-year-old aunt.
Joking.
Yes. No, I mean, that's absolutely, like, she lost her nut about it. And I was like, I cannot, like, if you think that I'm going to run away with your, you know, octogenarian aunt, then obviously this relationship is not in a place where either of us feel good about it.
No. Oh my God.
It was fucking crazy. Cause I'm like, this is in the middle of the fucking rehearsal dinner. She stands up and storms out because of this.
Oh my God. What were you doing? Like rubbing her thigh or something?
No. No, Jesus. Not at all. I mean, I don't even remember exactly. It was something really innocuous. It was just, I might have even said something like, to her aunt, like, well, we shouldn't talk right now because she's here listening or something, you know? Something like that. But just goofing off, right? Like, clearly I wasn't trying to make any time with this old woman.
Obviously not.
But,
Oh my God.
It was.
What kind of. Oh, I don't even know what that speaks to. Whatever right, it is.
Oh, I'll tell you, it is some real self esteem issues that I do not want to be around for the management of.
Yeah. It gets to a point, doesn't it, where you like, you want, like, you're not trying to change, but you know, love someone for their good parts, their bad parts, you know. But there is like a line where it's kind of like, okay, when am I their partner or when am I their parent/therapist? Like, and how much is this going to drain from me? You know, because like, I'm all about supporting partners. I'm all about supporting friendships. I'm all about, but there is a point though where it actually just starts being like, I'm not helping you, but you are sucking the fucking energy out of me and the life out of me.
Right. When you come home and like, all relationships are work to some degree.
Of course, yeah.
But if you come home and dread it because you know you're going to be even more exhausted the dynamics of the situation. Then it's just like it's untenable.
And I think we've all been in those situations.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. It is exclusively worst. How I date.
That's exclusive how I've dated so far, like, yeah. As in, like, it will always get to that point, which is why I'm kind of like, I started seeing somebody new, like, very new, but like, I'm also kind of like, do I want, I'm quite happy being by myself.
And
also as well, when you're a wise woman, an old wise woman in the forest, that doesn't come with a partner. In fact, the fact that you're like an old spinster is part of the whole deal. And, you know, you're supposed to have rumors about you that you eat children and cut men's, unsuspecting men's hearts out of their chest for your midnight moon blood sacrifices. It doesn't work if you've got a partner there.
I mean, you can still go off and get laid. That is well within the bounds of the...
Oh, 100%. Yeah, but having a partner?
Oof. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Here's the thing I find myself fantasizing about at this point.
Okay.
It's not like I'm going to meet the right person and settle down or something at this point. Yeah. It's like I'm going to get an RV and I'm just going to drive around the country with my dogs.
Fuck yeah.
And just like see the sights and go to terrible restaurants and two-bit sideshows.
Yeah. And can I come?
This is
can I hop on and hop kind of deal? Like I'll meet you over and like wherever and like we'll go see some fucking weird sideshow carny and then like
sure
we'll fill our bodies up with as much cholesterol as possible and then like I'll go back to my little cabin in the forest and hibernate for 4 to 6 months.
I'm telling you, when I fantasize about this, it's like, well, that's going to be the last 10 years of my life. I'm just going to be a nomad. Yes. You know, speaking of the true knot, but I will be my own true knot going town to town and like just visiting old friends and stuff. Like, hey, I'm gonna go to Wisconsin and see some friends of mine there, and I'll hook my RV up, you know, at some shitty RV park where I can live for 3 days. You know,
but
that sounds so appealing to me.
That sounds great.
Doesn't it?
It really does. I'm such a nomad myself. I never, the only reason that I'm staying currently in one place is purely for my kid's sake. As soon as she's old enough to move out and able enough to move out, as in financially, so in about 50 years,
right.
I am out. I am gone. I am moving abroad. Like I think 10 years, I think I moved something like 14 times for various reasons, but like I just don't like staying in one place for too long. I don't like feeling like tied down in any kind of way. You know, it was like one of the reasons why I'm trained to be a hairdresser is because it's something that I can take with me wherever I go. And like it's not a job that necessarily requires me to stay in one place. And like I've had a mortgage in the past, but it was purely because my partner wanted one and I figured I was going to spend the rest of my life with them. So I guess we're having a mortgage, but I wouldn't have a mortgage. I mean, you know, the state of the market aside, I still probably, if I ever did get a mortgage, if I ever did buy a property, it would be to rent out to someone else and have it as a source of income as opposed to like somewhere I would live.
Well, so that's kind of when I think about it, it's like, oh, I'll just rent out my house and I'll use, you know, that money plus retirement plus some royalty. Like I'll make a fine monthly income.
Yeah.
And then I'll just like, I'll plunk down like, hey, look, this is, I'm looking at this thing right now. It's this, good looking RV, $120,000.
Oh,
which, you know, I mean, yeah, that's $120,000, but that's where you live. That's your home on the road. And I dig it. I like this idea.
Yeah, it's a sweet idea.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, that the whole like bedroom in the back, little kitchen and so forth. And that's really it. The dogs, you know, a little table to do some writing. And that's what I would say. Like, I'd travel around if I'm like, hey, I'm going to stop in this place. I'm just going to sleep here and write for a couple of days. And there'll be enough internet to publish it. And like, I've really given this a lot of thought.
Yeah, and also because where you live in America, like, you've got such an expanse of different landscapes, you know? So, like, whatever kind of landscape you're in the mood for, environment you're in the mood for, you've got it without even having to cross water.
Yeah. So. Right, and I could go all the way up to Alaska, and yeah, right. Like the world is my burrito. I could go all through Canada.
Oh, I'll be living there by that point, so come say hi to me.
Great. Yeah, sure. Let me know where you are, and you know, yeah,
me and Sabrina will be, you know, shacked up together, clearly.
So like, but in my head now I'm like, okay, well, so I'll teach for about the next 10 years and then I'll just buy my motorhome and I'll just drive around.
Fuck yeah.
And it's like, it's really got me charged up. Like, it sounds like a great idea, but none of that includes like, well, and I'm going to find a nice lady to do that with. It's just like, I'm just going to go fucking do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This is yes. Yes. You're speaking my language, bro. Speaking my language. Should we do Tinder?
Yes, yes. Let's do Tinder is the flesh and then get out of here.
Yeah, nice. Right. So our first contender behind door number one, we have Scott, 34. My name is Scott. I have a sense of humor.
I know. All right. I'm sorry. I got to stop you right there. Because when you say, my name is Scott, I have a sense of humor. I'm having Space Ghost Coast to Coast flashbacks. Because there's a story that Brack tells that starts with, hello, my name is Bingo. And it's a story about a talking monkey. And it goes, hello, my name is Bingo. Can I have a banana? Eek, eek.
That's not how this goes, spoiler alert.
All right, but just so starting off, hello, my name is Scott. It feels a little silly.
It is.
And okay,
also,
sorry.
And also, your name is right there. Like, people, and you only have a certain amount of, like, characters you can use in a bio, and it's when people like, so you have so much already that they just, that you can say where you work, you can say what your sexual preference is, where you live, your height, all in the bits. You don't have to put any of that in your bio. You've got so much more to put in your bio. And it's, so it's when you'll have, like, say Scott, 34, 5'10", right, lives in X. Mm-hmm. And then in the bio they have, hi, I'm Scott. I'm 34 and I'm 5'10". It's just like funny. You know?
Right. It's speaking of getting kicked in the head by a goat. Hi, my name is Scott. Uh-huh.
I'm 5'10". Yeah.
I'm 5'10" tall.
Uh-huh. I'm 34 and a half years old.
Yeah, kid. Look, I just need to renew my driver's license. My name is Scott. Yeah, I got that earlier.
It's like that 10-second Tom from 50 First Dates. Hi, I'm Tom.
Yeah. All right, so is there someone else I can talk to? Do you have a manager? I'm 5'10" tall. All right, I'm just going to come back. Goodbye. My name is Scott.
Oh my God. I'm really glad what the next line is, because if it was anything else, I think it'd be very disappointing. Okay. Right, so Scott. My name is Scott. I can't do it now. I have a sense of humor. I'm hung like a horse as it's between my legs and smells funny. I have a daughter and would probably have more children. My boobs are real.
All right. I don't like him talking about his horse dick and his kids in the same bio.
It's always gross, isn't it? It's always so gross when they do that.
It's a hard left turn that's tough to navigate.
Well, you hope it's a left turn, because what if it's not fair?
Right. And I hope to have more.
Yeah,
is, again, this is all just bad phrasing. This is a first draft at best.
Well, did we mention that it starts off with, hi, my name is Scott.
Hi, my name is Scott.
I'm not like a horse and I want more children.
It smells funny. Yeah, well, you have to stop touching
it. It gets happy.
Yeah, it's, when I touch it a lot, it spits at me. Oh boy!
Oh my God!
All right, we're going outside. Scott, put on your helmet. My name is Scott.
Oh my God. My stomach hurts.
Okay, so Scott, clearly a winner. So far, yeah, so good.
He wins. I won't bother with the other two. Scott wins the day. So this one, second one. Oh my God. So he's put as his name, Dirty Dave.
Oh, sure.
And as an added extra, in one of his little photos slash videos, it's a video of him playing acoustic guitar, singing, can you guess, Wonderwall.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Yeah. Ugh. And his bio says, well, some sort of handle, it says handle, whatever that is, Cam. So I see Cam on anything, I'm immediately thinking it's some sort of sex stream. And then it just says four by itself. And then it says, I like to party and fuck. Content available also, reconfirming my Cam concept. I've got five dogs. Psychedelic astronaut supply. Kiss. Psychedelic spelt wrong.
Wait, so, psychedelic astronauts?
Okay. Apply. Yeah, so four, I like to party and fuck. Content available also. I've got five dogs. Psychedelic astronaut supply. And he's playing Wonderwall badly on a guitar. And he's called himself Dirty Dave.
Oh my God. All right. So how old is Dirty Dave? Do we have any
28.
Idea? Oh, that still feels old. To be calling yourself Dirty Dave and playing Wonderwall. That's a young man's game. that is first year of college.
Anyone's game, I think, at this point is just it's immediate red flag.
You're right. Like that was a move when I was 21.
I feel like as soon as it became a move, it became a cliche.
Yes, yes.
It's like, kind of like how anytime Ed Sheeran releases a ballad, it's already a cliche as a first dance song.
There was a window of about 8.5 minutes.
Yeah.
Where exactly. It was an effective ploy to play Wonderwall on acoustic guitar for a woman.
Yes.
And the window rapidly closed. There was one man, Kevin Jeffries, pulled it off. And that was it.
Not even Noel and Liam pulled it off.
No.
Let's be honest. So.
No. That was a door that closed behind Kevin Jeffries and it will not open again.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, so we've got this old pervy has been five dogs, which I think, you know, you were saying with two dogs that you were getting creepy.
Yes,
this guy's got five.
Five is five means that dogs is what you do.
Yes,
that is the whole of your personality.
It is. And then yeah, misspellings aside, psychedelic astronaut supply doesn't even fucking make sense.
I don't know what that is. I'm still trying to work it out.
And the fact that he signs it all off with a little kiss. Like, cute, mwah, loves ya.
Still might be better than My Name is Scott, which is...
I think My Name is Scott is better at the minute. At least I know he's got a big dick.
Yeah, but it also smells
I'm not blowing him, and he's using a condom.
Yeah, okay, but... all right. And yeah, you're not getting wind of anything down there.
Okay. Yeah, and also, I'm not going to end up on camera, so...
No. All right, what is... What's behind door number three here?
You ready? This is a doozy.
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay. Oh, ready to get political. Alex, 34. 6'1".
Okay.
Just returned from 3 months in Thailand. Pretty cool. Puts a Thailand flag there as well, just in case you weren't sure. To the snow. Need someone to break me in gently. Winking emoji. If you're a chubby girl, don't waste either of our time. Not times. Time. By liking me. I like feminine, physically fit women with something going on upstairs. I'm right wing and a Trump supporter, so no slippery lefties either.
Oof.
Okay, emoji, United flags, even though he lives in Cardiff, which is Wales. And then the American flag next to it. So
why the fuck is anybody in England a Trump fan?
I do not know.
Mm.
Could not tell you. No one I know is. Clarify.
Yeah, that seems very... I guess you have to be like, what, super Tory?
But I think even the Tories just kind of think he's a bit of a joke.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah, that...
But
Like, if you're, that would be like me being super invested in, oh God, what's the prime minister's name now? I can't even keep up.
Oh, fuck me. I don't know.
Not Junal.
Oh, this is bad, isn't it? I switch off after a while. I'm not going to lie.
Hold on.
I'm looking up.
I got it too. It's, wow. Rishi Sunak. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Sunak. So. Boy, the Conservatives have really been chewing through them. Theresa May, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, and Rishi Sunak,
mm-hmm.
all in the...
What, like 7 years?
8 years. Yeah, 7, 8 years. Well, and Theresa May left in 2019. So, yeah, the past five.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot.
Yeah, we're pretty shambolic over here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, but
we can still get abortions, so there you go.
Yeah, well, you know, you can in most reputable back alleys here. All right, so the choice is, which of these three it would be the recommend?
Yeah, so you got the right wing, Trump supporting, fat shaming, asshole.
That's a disaster. That guy is going to be appealing to a very specific kind of person.
Yeah.
And is going to be a person that also believes in the same nonsense. So,
yes.
Yeah, he is totally off the table and also should be on a list.
Yes, agreed. He's definitely an incel.
Yeah. If it would make sense if he was the dude with five dogs.
Yeah,
you know,
he's like, actually in as well. He's actually, from the photo of what I can see of the screenshot that I took, he's actually not a bad looking guy.
Yeah,
so it's kind of one of those things where, like, he's clearly on Tinder for his personality. You sure. Know, like men who are on Tinder who are good looking, generally, like, I mean, as in, like, not just good looking, but like very good looking, you know, like, mm-hmm. the kind of like, what are you on here for? Oh, right, because you have a shitty personality. Girls are on Tinder because everyone else they know, all the guys that they know, are just assholes. So yeah. We hope that by, like, casting out our nets a bit further, we're going to have more success. But no.
No, same shit. Different zip code, same shit.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, but when good looking men are on there, they're either a catfish or they're an asshole generally. So.
I should start catfishing.
No, it's such a cruel practice. Did I tell you about the time I got catfished?
No. I don't think so.
I'll keep this brief. So, just getting more comfy on my sofa. This was about 10 years ago. It was between my two big long-term relationships. And I was on Tinder for the first time and was pretty naive to the concept of things like catfishing. And there was this guy I was chatting to, had been chatting to for a little while. We were on WhatsApp by this point, and I had sent him some risque videos,
mm-hmm.
pretty risque, and photos and whatever. And, like, yeah. Anyway, so, I was shopping with my mum just before. She'd come back from Greece for a little bit. And we were out shopping. And because I was with my mum, we went into Marks and Spencer, which is a big kind of department store for the middle-aged, mm-hmm. and, typically. And
for the frumpy.
Yeah. Hey. No. Yeah, basically. And then so we go to the men's section because mum wants to get dad some pants and take them back with her, right? So we go to the men's section, and lo, behold, right in front of my face, about 8 foot high, is the profile picture of this guy I've been chatting to for 2 months.
Oh, no.
And I am pretty sure he is not a model, like, because in his bio, he was a technical engineer. So yeah, I don't know who the fuck I'd sent that shit to. And at that time, it wasn't even so much of the fact that I'd sent it to someone who wasn't who he said he was. I was like, shit, I hope it was no one I went to school with.
Right.
You know, like, or anything like that, because that's, to me, that's so much worse than a stranger.
Oh, right. Yeah. Somebody that knowingly, you know, tricked you into sending, you know, the goods.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I did keep my face out of it. I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think. But yeah, still, like, yeah.
I have always been kind of uncomfortable with that practice. You know,
I am now. Now they have a thing though where you can't screenshot, you can put it on like view once. That's okay. So great. Yeah, then you can't screenshot it, you can't do anything. It's all like, if you miss it, that's it, it's gone.
So anyway, picking our date.
Oh, right, sorry, yes.
Yeah, so yeah, definitely not right wing weirdo. Yeah,
yeah. So we've got the
my name is Scott, guy,
and my name is Scott.
Oh man, boy, that's real rough. His
boobs are real though. Scott's boobs are real. So
that's a right. Him saying I have a good sense of humor, and then making a my boobs are real joke. That's oxymoronic. One of those things
is not. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They don't compute.
So that's not great, but like you said, he might be hung.
Yeah.
He might be filled to the brim with dad jokes and bad puns.
I thought you were going to say come,
but also that
probably that too.
Yeah. Come and puns. That's the bookshop I'm going to open. I'm thinking it's my name is Scott.
My name is Scott as well.
And not just because of the good time we had with him, but I think that.
I mean, he does have a sense of humor. I can't say whether or not it's very good, but it's a sense of humor. And also as well, I like to think that I could rescue his daughter.
Yes.
Like, come with me if you want to live. scenario.
Come with me if you want to be cool.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Come with me if you don't want to be molested.
You need to get away from your father now. My name is Scott. Quick, come with me.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Now, yeah, we're going with Scott just to save the daughter and maybe get some dad jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe stretch out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe stretch it out.
With a condom.
Yeah, sure.
Several, in fact.
Right. You might maybe just get him to make a mold of it.
Maybe, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can say it's like a special kink of mine.
Uh-huh.
Not personal to you in that weird smell that's coming from your genitals, but you know, my own kink.
This one has hairs in it. You're supposed to shave first. I'm 5'10".
Oh my god, you know what he does?
What?
I just saw this. He works on a farm.
Of course he does. Of course he does. I like the animals. One time a goat ate Cheerios out of my palm and it tickled.
Oh my god. Of course he works at a farm. Fucking that explains so much. He really likes the animals.
Sure. Well, at least you know he's accurate when he describes himself having a horse cock. Because
yeah, right. He's got a comparison.
Right, it's right there.
Side by side.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god.
Scott, you're one in a million, sir.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff.
All right. Well, Kate, what do you say we get out of here?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Where can people find more out of you between now and when next we talk about romance and horror and come in the eye?
Come in the nose.
In the nostril.
Far more refined.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Only the best people yeah. get come in the nose. Did you hear what happened to Barbara? Come in the nose.
Ooh,
oh. She is really coming up in the world. No more vaginal coming for her. All facial orifices.
Yeah, sorry, the mouth is just so passe.
Right. I hear next spring she's going to get cum in the ear.
Oh, no, I hope not. My ear canals are really narrow. I get waxed filled up as it is.
Well, that just means they're, you know, ribbed for his pleasure.
So fucking stupid.
Yes, it is.
What was your question? Where can you find me? So, as earlier I said about my social medias and listening stuff for my new podcast, Kate on G's Book Review, so I won't repeat that. And then you can also find me on Eternal Darkness of Not So Spotless Minds. We talk about horror movies, new and old. We have lots of fun and shenanigans and giggles and the occasional interview with horror people, which we started doing since we go to festivals now. Mm-hmm.
Well, have you heard about Barbara going to the festivals and getting cum in her ear?
No, I haven't. Ooh. I must find myself a ticket.
It brings new definition to upper crust. No, I won't take it back.
Oh, should you? I'd be disappointed if you did.
So anyway, you're going to festivals now.
We're going to festivals now. Well, yeah, so anyway, so yeah, we've got some stuff coming up which will be cool, and it's good times. So that's with me and my co-host Matt, and you can find us on all your usual listening places. That one's not on YouTube, not yet anyway, we're working on it. And you can find us on Facebook and Instagram, and if you just type in Edonism, so just the acronym EDONSSM, mm-hmm. Or Eternal Darkness of Not So Spotless Minds, you'll find us, and come follow us, come chat, we're very interactive, and it's lots of fun to be had. So yeah, that's basically it. And obviously this one. What about you, Bo? What say you?
You know, Dark Parade is where you can find all the stuff. If you're listening to this, you're exactly where you need to be, and yeah. Just settle back, let the semen wash over you, and fill all the holes in your face.
Made easier by not wearing underwear.
Yeah, I feel like we've imparted a lot of lessons tonight, and that's the, you know, as you said, it's edutainment, but we went hard on the edu of the edutainment this time.
We did. Yeah, you're welcome, guys. Don't say we don't give you nothing.
All right, bye, everybody.
Bye.